talk about the Shuta D'Daini and maybe just a word or two literally about Yehemunah. And I think it won't be too terrible if after Yontif we discuss Dror D'Momona. That's a little bit of a separate sugya, Gemara Daf Beis and Midbeis, and maybe we can give that its own separate time, but at least in terms of the various paths that we use, Yachloku and Koldal Mvar and Shuda and Yehemunah, we want to try to have that as kind of a package before we segue into Parsha and Yontif and Yonim, as the next few days will bring. So I do want to just say a few more words about Koldal Mvar and to kind of sharpen something that we talked about yesterday and maybe take it a step further and focus our attention towards an interesting mechanics that we see there, an interesting dynamic. Just to kind of focus on the different approaches of what Kolda Olam Va represents. So we saw that it could either be that it's Bezdin not getting involved at all, which seems like that's more of a negative orientation towards Koldal Mvar, or the Rush's take, where he essentially saw it as somewhat of a truth-seeking process, as something that will ultimately get us towards a likely correct resolution, and therefore something with a little bit more merit to it. And I think it's also presumably the case that to whatever extent we're uncomfortable with Koldal Mvar, it doesn't sound like such a yashrus approach, so we have to figure out exactly what the specifics are, and presumably within the first view in the Rashbam and others, if that's the way we understand it as kind of a siluk, it could be that we acknowledge all of the deficiency of the Koldal Mvar approach, and hence the tour calling it anarchy essentially in a different context in Siman Aleph. But the point is that we simply don't have any access to it. That if we have a situation where there isn't anything productive that Beis Din can do, so then perhaps we're simply saying that that's what we're left with, and not that we necessarily admire anything about that process. Again, that would be different than the Rush, but that would essentially perhaps be what would emerge. So if we look at a question like we discussed yesterday at some length, and just to revisit it for a minute, the question of, should Koldal Mvar apply to a Sveika D'Dina? And we saw that that was a whole debate because the Shulchan Aruch, specifically the Ramah, does apply it to an issue where it's a Machlokas HaPoskim. And some of the Nosei Kelim on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, they thought that was surprising. Because, for example, if you follow the Rush's approach, it's about the passion that comes from knowing you're right. So then that's not really there if it's a machlokas haposkim. You don't have any inherent knowledge as to what the halachic truth is. Maybe you'll know the factual truth, but if facts aren't relevant, it's just a question of what does the halacha say about this, so then the Rush's logic seems to not apply. And that was why many were questioning the Ramah. The Ramah saying that it does apply in this case doesn't seem to follow the logic of the Rush, and the Trumas Hadeshin was invoked towards this end as well. So what I just want to highlight, and this is also relevant to what we said yesterday about how sometimes things don't fit together in such a neat package, so we should be aware of how things come from different directions, that it's probably true to say that both the Rush and the Trumas Hadeshin will lead us to say that Koldal Mvar should not apply in a Sveika D'Dina, but for different reasons, coming from different directions. And that's part of why the Trumas Hadeshin is invoked here in so many different ways, because he's a little bit all over the map, and we'll see why. The Rush, yeah, the Rush Taka would seem to say that it only works if it's something that you know is true, and you will therefore be motivated to fight harder. So it doesn't seem like it should apply if it's a case of a Sveika D'Dina. But that emerges from the Rush's belief in Koldal Mvar. Right? Saying that this is a positive system, but it's a positive system which doesn't have all the elements here to work. And if a person doesn't have any reason to know that he's right, so then the positivity of Koldal Mvar is not going to be able to function. Right? So far, so good. The Trumas Hadeshen, you may recall, we've been building a case so far, and we'll see it a little bit more today as well, that he seems to be down on Kol Da'al Mukvar. He doesn't like it so much. Right, we mentioned the Tshuva in Shin Yadalid, that Yachloku, based on Ochsin, is good, because even though Ochsin is not much of a proof, but it's good enough to get us out of this terrible Kol Da'al Mukvar, which is like Dina de Parsoi. And we saw the Tshuva yesterday, where he says that Kol Da'al Mukvar we do because we're afraid, since Ikla Mekum Allah de Milsa, since the truth could come out, we don't want Beis Din to be embarrassed. And we said that seems to also support this idea that we'd rather not do Kol Da'al Mukvar, but we can't risk the possibility that Beis Din is going to end up terribly contradicted, so we're stuck with it. All consistent with the idea that Trumas Hadeshen is kind of negative towards Kol Da'al Mukvar. So in that tshuva, in Shinnin Beis, if you had a chance to see it, so he talks about this Sveika Dedina question. And he says a few things, which is why he's able to be quoted on both sides of the issue. And at one point, he distinguishes between a case where the Gemara says Teku, it's an unresolved halachic issue in the Gemara itself, and the case where it's a Machlokas Rabbanan later. It's one suggestion he throws out there. But in the middle of his suggestions, he says this point, that it doesn't make sense to say Kol Da'al Mukvar by a suffix of a Machlokas HaPosek. Why? Because the whole point of Kol Da'al Mukvar is when it's Ikel HaMekum Allah Demilsa, when it's possible that the truth is going to come out, so then we take this approach. But here, what's going to happen? The two Balei Din are each going to come with a better raya from Matosos and Rebbe Akiva Eger, and they're not in control of that. So the whole mechanism of Kol Da'al Mukvar is not relevant here in this case. But what it sounds like he's saying, even though it sounds very much like the Rush, right? But he seems to be coming from an opposite direction. But he seems to be saying that we don't really need Kol Da'al Mukvar now. We don't like Kol Da'al Mukvar, but we have to turn to it if we're afraid the truth is going to come out and contradict us. But if the whole issue is an issue of pilpul in the Beis Medrash, it's an issue of figuring out the din on paper, so then there's no such risk. So then we don't have any need for Kol Da'al Mukvar. Sounds like that's his point. So I just want to highlight how that's interesting, that both the Rush and the Trumas Hadeshen, well, could, at least the Trumas Hadeshen in his middle comment over there, will point us to this reality that it doesn't seem to make sense to use Kol Da'al Mukvar if it's a machlokis in halacha, but really for opposite reasons. The Rush, because it's a good system, but it's not going to work in this case. And the Trumas Hadeshen, because it's a bad system, and we don't need it in this case, because we're not going to be contradicted by anything that's going to turn up later. You follow the difference? So it's just also a reminder that sometimes you want to line things up in a column. It's not going to work out so well, because you'll have the same position fits on both columns for two different reasons. So then the Ramah's statement that he does apply it to his Sveika Dedina, you have to put him somewhere in the middle. That it's not based on the Rush's approach that it's an actual bearer of MS. But it's not necessarily something that we will always run from, even if we don't need it. But again, he himself has it in that context as a secondary option. Right? Better to do Yachloku, but if not, you could also do Kol Da'al Mukvar. So that's an important issue. It's also important to be aware that there does seem to be a good proof from a Gemara, Maseches Gittin and Daf Samech Amud Beis, which I put on today's list. If you didn't see it today, you can see it tomorrow, where the Gemara does seem to apply Kol Da'al Mukvar to a question of a halachic suffix. The Gemara has water rights, and it wants to figure out who the water is assigned to. It's not clear what the din should be, and the Gemara there says Kol Da'al Mukvar and what seems to be a objective halachic question. So that's a pretty powerful source for the Ramah. So the Taz asks this question on the Rush. It's in Kuf Lamed Tes. And the Trumas HaDeshen discusses this issue himself in his whole discussion, where he says that it shouldn't really apply in the case of a Safek in Halacha. And he suggests towards the end of his tshuva that perhaps this is a Takanas Chachamim. That you're right, logically it doesn't make sense, but for whatever reason, in that case, Chazal thought this would be the way to address it. But Be'etzem, it's not necessarily logically relevant to a case of a Machlokas HaPosim. Hi.
You mean Takana from literally only that very specific
case? Which sounds like it. Perhaps in that case, or you could say further if you want to interpret the Ramah that way. The Ramah, the question on the Ramah is only because the Ramah is not inherently problematic, especially because the Ramah's got a Gemara. It's just that you follow the lumdus of the Rush, then it becomes a problem. But if you're willing to assume that it's not necessarily a pure logical conclusion, but that it's a function of some type of policy, so then anything's open. Could be that in a Hanami, the Rush's logic doesn't take you there. But it's not inherently contradictory in the Ramah. The Ramah didn't say anything that's by itself hard to understand as a matter of policy. So you could say within the Ramah that it's for some reason a policy. Or at least to deal with Al-Gamar, you could say that's a Din Rabbanan. So I just think it's important to be sensitive to these differences and see how this issue, you'll essentially have three views you could take. Then you could say that you could apply Kol Ba'Omvar in a case of a Sveki Dedina. Or you could go in either direction. You could say you shouldn't apply it because it won't work to do what we want it to do, like the Rush. Or we won't apply it because we don't need to. And if we don't need to, let's stay away from it, like the Trumas HaDeshen probably means. So if you take that discussion to the next level, I was thinking about the following question. What would you say about the following? How do we figure out, in terms of the details of Kol Da'olam Gvar, what's included? What's fair? All fair in love and war. So what is Kol Da'olam Gvar? Is it war? Is all fair? So, for example, the Rush's scenario where one person will fight more passionately because he's got the truth on his side, that only works if they're roughly starting off from the same place. What if one guy is three times the size of the other guy? So if we include a physical Kol Da'olam Gvar, so he doesn't have to work at all in order to win. So we'll say that leads us towards Damas. So we have to figure out, it could be that in practice, the Rush might limit how he would apply Kol Da'olam Gvar. Maybe he would set rules. While if it's just that Beis Din doesn't get involved at all, so then it's not so clear that there's any rules, because maybe in a Hanami it's not fair, but Beis Din isn't able to do anything else to make it more fair. Because Beis Din essentially isn't involved to begin with. So here is a fascinating discussion. If you want to see a reverse halachic evolution. So we'll go in reverse chronological order on the following point. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. There's tshuvas in Choshen Mishpat and Chelek Beis, where he criticizes the Ramah. The Ramah elsewhere, not the Ramah we've been talking about till now, but a Ramah I put in the Maror Makomos this morning. And you can see it tomorrow if you haven't seen it yet. The Ramah talks about the concept of Avid Inish Dinel Anafshe. And sometimes it comes up that a person needs to act on his own behalf. Let's say Beis Din is not able to recover from stolen property. We have a case, let's say, where we know there definitely is stolen property, and Beis Din can't get it back for him, so sometimes the person has the right to just take it back. If there's a specific item that he knows is his, he can act on his own behalf. So the Ramah says, quoting Rishonim, and we'll discuss the Rishonim in a second, says the Ramah that you shouldn't use for this purpose, you can use whatever is at your disposal to get back your item. Says the Ramah, you shouldn't use the non-Jewish courts. They are kos shel aklum to get it back. And Rav Moshe Feinstein in his tshuva, he didn't get that. He thought that was objectionable. He said, why shouldn't you if that's what you need to do? So then do that. And he says he thinks the Ramah is making a mistake in the following way. Because the Ramah is based on Rishonim, who we will discuss in more detail in a second, who said that about something else. What did they say it about? Kol Dolim Gvar. And says Rav Moshe Feinstein, yes, if it was Kol Dolim Gvar, it wouldn't make sense to allow someone to use the non-Jewish courts. Why? Because of the rush. Right? If you follow the rush, so then the whole point is that you will have this internal strength that will come from your conviction that you're right. So if you're going to bring in the cavalry, right, if you're going to bring in the secular government, so then that will give you power that goes beyond what anyone can muster up through their personal conviction. So Rav Moshe is addressing this point, right? Rav Moshe is basically saying that the rush leads us to say that we have to set rules. There's going to have to be limits. We can't allow everything. We can't say all's fair in love and war, because the only things that will be fair are those things that are emerging from his personal passion about the issue. But if he can bring in reinforcements from the secular government, so then that's off. That's out of bounds. Fascinating point. So says Rav Moshe, that's why the Rishonim say you shouldn't use it in that context, in Kol Dolim Gvar. But if it's a situation of Avid Inish Dil Nafshe, where you have to get something that you know is clearly yours, we can all tell it's clearly yours, and somebody else is taking it illegitimately, so then you shouldn't compare the two. They're different worlds. Kol Dolim Gvar is defined by the Rush's Svara, and that doesn't extend to Avid Inish Dil Nafshe, and therefore he argues on the Ramah, who brings that halacha into Avid Inish Dil Nafshe. Michael?
I don't see the issue with the Ramah, because he claimed that his willingness to go outside of the community to non-Jews for this thing really shows his conviction, even more so than staying in the community.
So you're asking the question from the other side. You're saying that you should allow it even by Kol Dolim Gvar. You should allow it by both. So Rav Moshe is coming from the other direction. Rav Moshe is saying that the Ramah seems to think you shouldn't allow it at all. Not by Kol Dolim Gvar or Avid Inish Dil Nafshe. And Rav Moshe is saying, no, that's a bad comparison. It's only an issue that's specific to Kol Dolim Gvar. Because Kol Dolim Gvar works based on passion. That's the Russian's Kiddush. And therefore, if it's passion, so it's not right to bring in the Arkos, to bring in the secular courts. But it doesn't mean you never bring in the secular courts. So he's going in the opposite direction, but you're saying that you should say maybe both. So
it's interesting. Really based on the rush?
Ah, so that's interesting. So the Ramah is not only not based on the rush, really, but he's based on the Truma Sadeshin, who's based on the Mordechai. And it's fascinating, if you look at all of them inside, so you'll see what emerges really is basically three different reasons to say the same thing. That the Truma Sadeshin in a tshuva, which I put on today's list, and you can look at it tomorrow, it's Shin Dalet. The Truma Sadeshin quotes the Mordechai, who says that you shouldn't involve the Arkos, you shouldn't involve the secular courts, because essentially it's Mechur HaDavar. It's unseemly is probably the best English translation for mechur. It's not the right way to go about things. It's not proper. So therefore, you shouldn't involve the Beis Din. So that actually, as we'll see, really kind of supports the Ramah, that he's saying it probably more in a general sense. He does talk about it, if I recall correctly, called Dalm Gvar specifically, but not only. Now he is referring to a Mordechai. And he identifies the Mordechai as being Bishili HaGozel Kama, which is going to be the end of the ninth parak of Bava Kama. So I'm not sure which Mordechai is referring to there, but there is a Mordechai in the tenth parak of Bava Kama, which correlates to Daf Kuf Yud Zayin, and that's also on the Marmar Komus if you got a chance to see it. So there, the Gemara in Kufid Zayin and Baba Kama has a story about two people who were fighting over a net, and one of them grabbed it and turned it over to the governor. It's part of the debate. And the Gemara criticizes him. The Gemara says he should be condemned for that on some level. So the Mordechai, talking about that story over there in Kufid Zayin and Baba Kama, says the Mordechai, what was bad about what this guy did? What is it, Mesira? He says, no, it's not Mesira. This is a person trying to figure out a din on his own behalf, which he's entitled to do. It's not a Mesira issue. But, says the Mordechai, it's a different problem. He says, when we have a halacha that's essentially called Olam Gvar, right, which the Gemara, I don't think, mentions straight out, but the Mordechai is providing the background that that should be what was going on in that case. So you can't involve the secular government in that process. Because this is the whole point of Kol Da'olam Gvar, is we're going to go back and forth, and we'll bring proof, and we'll bring Edim, and we'll bring this, we'll bring whatever we can. So now what's going to happen? So let's say, so the other side has better proof, so you're not going to be able to then switch it back to him, because now the government has it, and you're going to be subject to their rules. So this person in the Gemara is criticized because the halacha calls for Kol Da'olam Gvar, so you can't bring in the governmental forces, that's going to make it not work. So what's fascinating here is that you have Reb Moshe quoting the Ramah, criticizing the Ramah, who's based on the Trumas Hadesh and who's based on the Mordechai. But essentially there are three different ways to address the same issue. Three different reasons why Kol Da'olam Gvar you should not turn to the Arkos. According to the Mordechai, it's because you won't be able to function within Kol Da'olam Gvar. Once the government has it, you won't be able to move it back and forth. According to the Trumas Hadesh, and it's unseemly, it's Mechur Adam. And according to the way Reb Moshe explains the Rush, it won't be a function of your passion. It won't be evidence that you're doing anything because you're motivated by your truth. And therefore, we shouldn't allow it as part of the Kol Da'olam Gvar process. So I think that's fascinating. Emerges, if you read all these Shoshonim inside, you come out with three different reasons for this. And Reb Moshe's attack on the Ramah, he's right according to his reading of the Rush, maybe, and according to the Mordechai. And the Trumas Hadesh, who came in between it all, he actually works better with the Ramah. That the Ramah could say, I guess, for this purpose, I think that Kol Da'olam Gvar and Avid Ish Jil Nafshe comes first. So now we have a clash between two Jonathans, so we'll go to Teitelbaum first.
Can you just
read the Trumas Hadesh again? Yeah, the Trumas Hadesh's point is essentially that it's Mechur Adavar, that it's unseemly, it's not the way we want to do things. Basically, I mean, he goes into it a little bit more, but that seems to be the thrust. And if that's the point, so then it's reasonable to say this would apply to both situations, a Kol Da'olam Gvar situation and a...
Yeah, really, he could line up with anybody then.
Correct, right. He's more open. Yeah. But that doesn't, if you're basing yourself on the Trumas Hadesh, which I believe the Ramah is, so then that does not leave him open to emotional criticism. Because that's a reasonable Sushtel to make then, to say that both by Kol Da'olam Gvar and Avid Ish Jil Nafshe, it's not the way we want to do things. But Reb Moshe's objection is assuming that Kol Da'olam Gvar has a unique issue because of the Rosh. And indeed, the Mordechai also applies it in a unique way, but for a different reason. So it comes out that from that whole progression, the Mordechai, the Trumas Hadesh quotes, with Ramah then quotes, who Reb Moshe criticizes because of the Rosh, we end up having three different reasons why Kol Da'olam Gvar we should not turn to the Arkos in order to allow that to work.
Can you say that Reb Moshe's attack also works sort of well against the Svara of the Mordechai? Because the point being is that it takes Kol Da'olam Gvar the way it's supposed to function out of the picture.
So correct. Well, so it works with the Mordechai, I mean. That,
no, because the Mordechai is saying that we wanted to have Kol Da'olam Gvar, but now we can't. You got them involved.
Right.
So with the Rush, except the Rush has a more complicated, he adds on to it because of the fact that someone's going to fight stronger. So
right, so it works with the Mordechai, that both the Mordechai and the Rush,
right,
are reasons to disagree with Ramah.
So say they disagree with them all equally. So
right, right. Their emotion could have, right. Correct, right, right, right. That's what we're saying. That either way, both of them have a point that's unique right. to Kol Dalim V'Var. So therefore, the Rush, who seems to be equating Kol Dalim V'Var and Avishin L'Nafshe, are problematic for those two views. And that's Ramosha's point, although he's focusing on the Rush.
So you still have the Trumas Hadeshin.
Correct, right. So out of the three reasons, the Trumas Hadeshin, which I believe is what the Rama actually cites, works okay with him. And it's the Mordechai coming before, and Ramosha, based on the Rush, that create problems for the Rama. Hi, Roni. Yeah, the Mordechai's point is that part of the functionality of Kol Dalim V'Var is we have to have the flexibility to be able to go back and forth and to say, okay, now you're winning, you brought more proof, etc. So if we allow somebody to all of a sudden bring in the government, so we're not going to be able to do that.
So it's practical.
Right, so the practicality of Kol Dalim V'Var is not going to work once the government gets involved. So essentially, when the Gemara criticized this person, that's what the Mordechai was trying to explain. The Gemara just tells us this person gets some level of criticism, and the Mordechai has a little bit of a discussion trying to figure out what exactly are we focusing on, what did this guy do so terrible by turning this property over to the government. So it's a fascinating point, and it addresses this general question, at least one aspect, Reb Moshe specifically, addresses this question, which is worth asking. I don't know if we have an absolute answer to it, but this tshuva of Reb Moshe is, in the course of making a different point, addresses it a little bit, that we have to figure out, what do we mean, Kol Dalim V'Var? All's fair in love and V'Var? Or only we'll set rules. It'll be a boxing match, and we'll say, you know, no hitting below the belt. We'll say there's certain things that we don't allow because it's not within our parameters. And that presumably is also a function of this question of what exactly is Kol Dalim V'Var? Is it Beis Din involved because there's some reason to do it this way, like the Rush says, or is Beis Din essentially not involved, which may mean, regrettably, that there are things that are not so fair, but they're going to happen anyway. So I just thought that was important hosafa onto the whole Kol Dalim V'Var issue. So now let's talk for a few minutes about Shuddu D'Daini, one of the other options that appears in a number of Gemaras. It appears in Bava Basra, and as we'll see, Gemara is in Kiddushin. I'll give you, you don't have to get all the Makaras down now, I'll give you a more expanded list tomorrow, but it's a Gemara in Kiddushin and Daf Ayin Dalet, and a Gemara in Ksubis and Daf Tzadi Dalet, and Daf Sora Daf Pehe and Mubeis, where the Gemara invokes at least as a possibility, and the Gemara that's closest to quote unquote our Gemara, it's not our Gemara, but our Gemara in Bava Basra will claim it as our own because it's been the parallel Sugya the whole time. So there it's Machlokas Rav Shmuel, what is the preferred approach in some situations? Is it Yachloku or is it Shuddu D'Daini? So we've been trying to figure out the whole time, we talk about preferred approach. You know, what is Beis Din interested in doing in general? Is Beis Din interested in settling things peacefully or is Beis Din interested in figuring out some type of MS or somewhere in between? So what exactly does Shuddu D'Daini? How does that fit into the whole story? So here you have a machlokas rishonim, a very basic machlokas rishonim, as to what it means. How does the machlokas play out? Anyone saw, for example, the Rashbam and Bava Basra, or Rashi and Ksuvis, which says the same thing? What is the meaning of Shuddu D'Daini according to the Rashbam and Rashi? Essentially,
The judge. They're based on all the details of the situation, trying to figure out who is rightful, who the guy really wants to give it to.
Correct. That basically, they do their best. They don't have real evidence, or else they would function based on that. So they do the best based on what they have. But they'll try to evaluate, okay, looking at what we know, what seems to be the most likely thing that happened here. And Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos in a number of places. Tosfos in Bava Basra and Tosfos in Kiddushin and Tosfos in Ksubis. A number of places Tosfos disagrees and says, Tosfos, what is Shuddu D'Daini? Essentially, it's completely discretionary. The Beis Din will do whatever they feel like. They're not obligated specifically to try to figure out what the truth is, what the historical reality was. but they will do what they can. And there are a couple of Gemaras which get brought into the whole discussion. For example, there is a Gemara in Ksubis and Af Pehe, where the Gemara talks about these two guys named Tuvia, who are both in the running to get a gift, that a man died, and before he died, he asked to give his possessions to Tuvia. And now we realize that he wasn't clear enough that there are two Tuvias. Thought it was a unique name. Apparently it's not such a unique name. So the Gemara goes back and forth. Well, let's try to figure out what was most likely. So the deceased gave a gift to Tuvia. What Tuvia would he be most likely to give it to? Was one more friendly? Was one related to him? Was one a Talmud Chacham? What are the different reasons we might use to say that he could have picked this one over that one? And then the Gemara says, in the end, that if they can't narrow it down any better, should the dining. So you could kind of read that Gemara either way. And you could read it that the whole description was part of the process of should the dining. The Gemara was telling us how the Dayanim try to whittle it down, try to figure out everything we can bring into the picture to try to see who it could be. Or you could say that Shuddha Dedaini is invoked after all of that, that it represents not knowing all that stuff, and therefore, okay, it's up to the Dayanim's discretion to decide what to do. There's also a Gemara Maseches Gittin, on Daf Gimel, Dalit, where the Gemara talks about somebody who sends a messenger to give something to someone else, and then the sender dies. And the messenger can't find the person, and he doesn't know whether the object was niknes right to the person immediately, or whether it was his job to eventually be makne to the person. So we're not sure how to resolve that, so the Gemara says, shuddah, that the shliach gets to figure it out. So there, that's not a evaluative process. He's not a dying. So Tosfos over there in Gittin says, oh, you see, that's what shuddah is. Shuddah is not a process where you actually try to figure out the truth, but it's discretionary. So in that case, where we're stuck, the messenger has his discretion. That's what shuddah means. And so too, that's what shuddah the dying means. All right.
But it's not necessarily like thoroughly, like Tosfos can't use that as a as a bulletproof riot does. And I haven't seen any of the Makaros for this yet. But
you will tomorrow.
Hopefully. Mm-hmm. But when you're looking at the Rashbam and Rashi, it sounds like when they say they're looking for the truth, it means like what the intention was, or that's what it's two different types of cases. One of them, there's a factual reality that this is something that actually happened, so you're looking, that's the truth that you're intending to find. Whereas in the case in Gittin, the intentional truth is the truth of the original Machne. And so it can't be left up to some, you know, random guy who doesn't know it.
Or random, or even worse than that, a random messenger.
No. So the random messenger is the one, or I'm thinking better, not as a random messenger, that the guy gave him explicit instructions saying this is what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, but he doesn't know how to interpret those instructions. That was part of the problem. But your point is well taken. I think you're correct, and that's how some understand it. That to defend Rashi and the Rashbam is that exactly like you're saying, the cases aren't comparable.
I'm saying it in the reverse. It sounds like I'm saying it incorrectly.
But it still gets to the same point. We'll still put you on the same side if you don't want, because it still comes to essentially the same point. Is that it seems to be there's a fundamental difference here between, there's clearly a fundamental difference between Rashi and the Rashbam on one side, and Tosfos, and by the way, a lot of other Rishonim as well, on their side. As to what is this process? Essentially, it goes back to our same Yachloku and Kol Dolim Var kind of questions. We see the same kind of questions coming up again and again. Is this Beis Din trying to find some MS here? And therefore, we'll essentially use whatever we have? Or is that not what's happening, and we're going to essentially have a policy decision that Beis Din has discretion? So clearly there is a major difference between Rashi, Rashbam on the one hand, where they seem to see this as an investigation of Beis Din, and a ruling accordingly. And the Tosfos view, where it's more of Beis Din, as a matter of policy, will just decide to give it to who they want to give it to.
What criteria do they use according to Tosfos?
According to Tosfos, they don't seem to use any criteria. That's the thing. Now, I think your point is well taken. I'm going to tell you that you're making this point, that you can decide afterwards if you want to own it or not. But that if you're going to say that, like Rashi, that this is Beis Din in an evaluative process, so then, okay, the Gemara and Gittin is simply not relevant. It's a different kind of case. So you can't say, well, this should teach us what goes on in Shuddah D'Dayni. It just uses the same word, Shuddah, but it doesn't mean that's what Shuddah D'Dayni is. And Tosfos is apparently understanding that it's not really an actual investigation of Beis Din, and therefore we can compare it to what the Shliach does in the Gemara in Gittin. Parenthetically, what does the word Shuddah mean? So that Rashi and Ksubis and Tosfos both say it means you're trying to act it out, right? To throw it out, the hashlacha. They're throwing it. So how do you interpret that? They're throwing it out as if they're not being so careful, or they're throwing it in front of you and saying, this is the story, take it or leave it. So you can try to figure out what that means, but that's how the Rishonim explain this, what Shuddah is. Hi.
This may be like a weird question, but like, isn't it there's no like objective criteria?
That's not a weird question. Tosfos asks that question himself. Right? So Tosfos says, so wait a minute, hold on. If you're going to say they could do whatever you want, so then let's allow bribery. Let's say, okay, so whoever makes it worth your while, you're going to act on their behalf. So Tosfos says, no, that's not going to happen because we say Shuddah D'Dayni, they have to be Dayanim. And the Gemara says that Hanotel Schar Ladun Dayanim B'Taylor, that if he's going to get paid, so he's not considered to be a Dayan. Now, just parenthetically, you may wonder, so the Dayanim today are getting paid. We have to figure out how they get paid. The same way many people who do mitzvah jobs have to figure out halachically how they're paid. Here it's a little bit more severe of an issue, because it's not just that they perform a mitzvah, but they perform a mitzvah where they're supposed to be objective. So being paid by one side adds a whole other element and risks the Torah prohibition of shochad. So we have to figure out exactly how they get paid. They get paid as schar batala, they get paid for the time, they get paid equally by both litigants. That's also an important point of halachal maisa of the contemporary Beis Din salary process or compensation process. But that's how Tosfos addresses that question. Now, you'll see today, I have a feeling nobody saw it. I'll see tomorrow, God willing, I have a feeling nobody saw it yet. But what's striking is that as much as Tosfos is comfortable that there won't be Shofet here, the Yerushalmi, in Ksuvis, in Perek Yud Halacha Dalet, Yerushalmi actually spells Shuddah differently. You know how it spells it? Yes, Shin Vav Ches Dalet Aleph Shuchta D'Dayani. And says the Korban Eidah, you know why it's called that? Because they can take shochat. Because this is so outside the normal judicial process that they can get paid. Now, clearly, other Rishonim didn't see it that way. And if you look on the other side of the page in the Yerushalmi, you see that the Pnei Moshe interprets that Gemara differently. That line is bitmia. You know, it was a sarcastic reference to the process, but it doesn't mean that there's actual shochat taking place. And clearly, Tosfos is assuming that there isn't shochat, although they ask the question, because it does seem that the process is open to that, and that's what we have to figure out. But that's an interesting question, and you have to figure out exactly how to reconcile the Korban Eidah's statement with any type of a fair judicial process. So Tosfos clearly won't allow that. They'll assume that it's discretionary, but not so far that we would actually allow shochat to actually take place. Question is clearly an issue, but that's how they assume that that's going to negate the status of Dayanim, and they have to be at least Dayanim in order for this process to happen. Jonathan?
But in the case that Tosfos is talking about, that was with the Shliach, there was no Dayanim.
In the case of the Gemara and Gittin, as a
right.
Shliach.
So then it's right. So he's not dying, so then.
But Tosfos said this all over the place. Tosfos says in all the Gemaras about Shuddah D'Dayni.
No,
Tosfos
says
in Shofar,
saying Shofar, I'm generally not worried about because.
Oh, yeah, so that case
is
right. So maybe it could be that he could do Shofar. We don't know exactly how that works. But in terms of at least the general shuda de dayani issues, so that's where we're worried. So we have a judicial process that allows for shochet.
So the chora buying shuda de shliach tosus would allow.
Maybe. Yeah, that we're not so worried about. We're worried about the dayanim being subject to shochet. So the Rush has a tshuva, which I didn't put on the Mar Makomos, even though it's a very major source, but it's a very long tshuva, and I didn't want you to spend a lot of time looking for the key lines to tell you about it first, and then you can look it up for later. But it's in Simon Kuf Zayin, the tshuva Sarash, where he talks about Shud the Daini, and he invokes it, and he quotes this Machlokas Rishonim a little bit, and he invokes Shud the Daini, he seems to have a little bit of a preference to the view in Rishonim that it's essentially discretionary. And he invokes this in the context of shalom. He says that part of the desire to make shalom in the world means that we need to have a way to settle things. And therefore, the halacha grants the dayanim the power to make these decisions at their discretion. That we need a way to just end it, so the dayanim will have the power to make their decision, and they won't have to defend it, so to speak, based on it being actual emes, and therefore this is consistent with shalom. That's what it sounds like the Rush is saying when he makes that comment. This is apparently parallel. So we find, for example, the halacha that we always give the kohen the first aliyah, as opposed to giving a tamar chacham the first aliyah, because we don't want to get involved in subjective situations. Sometimes we have certain halachas where we just remove the subjectivity from the realm of what's there, because of Darach HaShalom, because we'll have less fighting if we just set some absolute rules. So that seems to be what the Rush is saying, that essentially Dayanim, they have the final say, because that will limit the amount of fighting that can happen. This will allow harmony to prevail if we essentially say that Dayanim have this final authority, that they don't need anything more for other than their discretion. Ronnie?
Wouldn't it work better with the Rashi or Rashba? Because if there's less criteria, then a little more.
So his point seems to, he doesn't spell out very clearly what he's getting at the Rash, but I think his point is along the lines of what we're just saying, is that the Shalom doesn't come from the fact that it's more justifiable or more defendable or closer to the historical reality. The Shalom emanates from the fact that the Halacha grants the authority to the Anim to say, this is how it is, because I said so, basically. Like the parent says to the child, because I said so, there's no debate. So too, since the dayanim have that authority to make the halacha such because they say so, so that will create a certain level of peace in society. It seems to be what the Rush is getting at. It's an interesting idea. Hi.
According to Tosfos, why would we ever invoke Shud HaDaini?
Why would we? Was clearly very not ideal. We would invoke it only in situations where we're pushed toward that because of other considerations.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, what would those considerations be? For Rashi and Rashban, you can understand why they would say, like, okay, there's still at least a little bit of thought going into it, and we're going to try and do something rational.
Right.
For Tosfos, it could be totally irrational. It could be totally, like, why would you ever come to the point where you would say that? It seems like, I mean, for, yeah, really any alternative would be. So
your alternatives would be better if there is either an approach to get to the truth, or there are fewer other consequences. It seems to be this is probably in line with the Rush, that the Rush is essentially saying that there will be Rush and Tshuva, that there will eventually be times when there isn't really much else that you're going to be able to figure out. And actually, my focus in the Gemara, that's Rabbi Shmuel and Baba Basra, whether Chalukah is better or Shudah D'Daini is better. Let's say if you have a situation, maybe they could theoretically both apply in similar situations, almost, where you really hit a dead end. So what is the better approach? Do we say chalukah, which will make everyone maybe equally unhappy, as the cynical definition of a shara is sometimes, everyone walks away a little bit upset? We mentioned that the first day or the second day, right, that we hope that the halacha probably has a different definition of shara, but sometimes that's an element of it, that everybody walks away with a little bit less than what they want. Or should we say that's not the best way to deal with a dead end, and let the dayanim have the blanket authority to say what they want to say? And according to most views, the Yerushalmi aside, stopping short of something blatantly bribish, but not taking away from the fact that it'll just be up to whatever they feel like.
Right, but I'm saying I understand that there are certain cases, even according to Shadon, like Rashi's understanding or Rashbam's understanding, where you really don't have any details to assess, so you end up having to just do it based on, we get the feeling or whatever. But Tosfos seems to be saying that even if you have lots of details in front of you, lechachila, you can turn to the guy who's like almost definitely, you know, even if you don't have bulletproof rios, fine, but there's a lot of indication that it's going in that direction, you can still go in the other direction. Simply because you have that discretion.
If you think about that, actually, though, it's interesting also psychologically, because all those details, none of these details qualify as edus. Right, so let's say, for example, the Gemara about Tuvias, the two Tuvias. So that we look to see, who, are any of them related, are any of them particularly close, are any of them neighbors, are any of them Talmud Chacham? So what are you going to do when one guy says, well, I'm the big Talmud Chacham, and the other guy says, but I was his brother. And the third Tuvia shows up and says, but I was his Chavrusa. And they all seem to make sense. So you're going to pick one of these, and you're going to say, well, it does seem to be that the Chavrusa has the best claim, and the other two are going to go crazy. So since you don't have absolute edus, absolute evidence that's really going to count, and ever you have all these weak points, so you could see why there would be two different approaches to those weak points. Should we say, well, the weak points are better than nothing? Or should we say, no, they're not better than nothing, because everyone's going to have their own weak points, and these weak points could be endless. And that will lead to more machlokas than not, trying to decide which weak point is going to be credited more than others. Another Gemara in the end of Tainus about the Tuba'av Gemaras, where the Gemara says that women who have different qualities, each one invokes that quality as what you should look for in a shidduch. I always thought that that Gemara is probably not telling us necessarily what we should be looking for specifically, but the Gemara is making the point essentially, and this is very, very true about all human nature, is that when you're in an argument with somebody else and you happen to have certain things in your favor, you become convinced that that is the very most important thing. So when you have, let's say, the Tuvias, and one guy is a neighbor, and one guy is a relative, and one guy is a Chavrusa, each one will become passionately convinced that being Chavrusa is the most important reason why you should give somebody a gift, or being the relative is the most important reason. And for Beis Din to pick one of these and try to use that, one could argue better they should stay out of the whole thing and say, listen, we'll decide where it goes, and that's it. And that maybe to get involved in these substandard evidences, maybe that's more machlokas generating than ignoring them. You could disagree, but I could see why somebody would say that.
You would say, do just say kol dalam gevar.
So, but then kol dalam gevar has downsides too. So, and sometimes, sometimes that's not a respectable process either. And let's say, for example, if you think that it might really be someone's, and you're worried that he's going to lose, and if you think that's an issue, so there are reasons.
But then that's not Tosfos' understanding. Then you're actually a son.
Right, but if Beis Din is going to assign it, and if we want Beis Din involved, that's part of the issue, right? Should the Daini is a Beis Din process as opposed to, or some type of a Beis Din process, as opposed to Kol Dalam Gevar being a not Beis Din process, so sometimes that's going to be the dividing line. And that if Beis Din is involved, they can't necessarily go to Kol Dalam Gevar. So I can hear why one might come to that conclusion. You could definitely disagree, as you could.
I didn't see it, I don't understand that.
So God willing, tomorrow you'll see the Tosfos inside, and you'll have a little more sympathy for his view. Michelle, are you up?
It seems like it's kind of like a situation where it's this or Yehemuna, where we don't really know what's going on, we can't really decide based on facts whose it is, so it's kind of like either Kol Dalam Gevar or this,
Or Yahoku, Gemara contrasts Yahoku.
Right, we have all these different options of what the stock's going to be when we don't really know what's going on.
Right.
So why would there ever be a situation of Yehemuna where Beit Din can do it with that? Like Yachlogu, right. We're saying they both have a very good claim on it. They both, there's clearly just the two of them kind of pulling this one thing, so we'll split it. Kol Dalam Gevar, they have some sort of things where if the final stock is going to be like Yehemuna, why don't we just...
I mean, if Yehemuna is an option, why don't we use it more? Or why do we have...
Why is Beit Din taking it in when they can use their discretion instead of facts?
Right, so Yehemuna essentially is a narrow situation which we really will use if it's a Vadai Ramai kind of story. And we need to make sure that the Ramos is penalized. And we're worried that otherwise the Ramai could just get involved and then figure out.
I have no idea which.
Right, essentially that there's a real Suffolk and that both are in the game. And that we're worried that the Ramai will profit from having kicked up the suffix, so we have to...
So it's like a combination of also not having any proof, and also having no idea.
Correct, and having the and the munach is the combination of the Ramai factor being a dominant concern.
Because there's not even a discretion to think like, oh, this guy's probably the Ramai, but.
Correct. We'll mention now, so we can get it in now, in case we run out of time. So we're going to talk about Yehem Munach at the end, but we don't have that much more to say about it. So we'll just mention also that there's a Tosus in Gittin on Daf Mem Dalet Amid Beis, it's on the Maamar Komos list, that notes that this whole idea of Munach essentially is a Knas, that we want that the person will confess, and we hope that since it's going to be a clear frustration, and it's just going to end up locked away forever, so that the person will rather confess rather than go through it. So the Munach has its own unique component to it. Ali.
Are there any shudos that say the distinction between shuda and yachlok is dependent on Dara Dovimona?
So the Gemara seems to be invoking that in Bava Metzia a little bit. You know, that Dara Dovimona is the reason to say yachlok. So it's possibly relevant in that direction. It's probably contrasting it with Kol Dalim Gvar. But we'll see. We'll get a little bit more into Dvar. We'll be able to treat it as a separate topic, and we'll get a little bit more into that after Yontif. So there are some other issues that the Rishonim argue about in terms of Shudda, which are probably related, especially because some of them are in Tosfos, for example. So Tosfos in, say, Kedushin, and Fayindal and Maralef, one of the many Tosfos that talks about this. So Tosfos invokes the principle of Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. So that's interesting. Do you think Tosfos says that because they have to, will Shitasa? Or would Rashi agree that Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker is relevant? What do you think about that? Because on the one hand, it's consistent with their view, right, that since it's essentially discretionary, so it's up to the Dayanim, so we don't know that it has any connection to the historical truth. So we need a basis for the Dayanim to have this authority, which does not correlate to justice directly. Maybe it correlates to peace, but not so much to justice. So presumably it's got to come from somewhere, so that seems to be what Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker is providing. So Tosfos, L'shitasam, we see why they need it. Does Rashi need it? It's less clear. Maybe the process is more of a judicial process, and therefore we don't need to say they're being mafkin anything. But it's not necessarily conclusive. It could be that the process is such a weak evaluative process that maybe they do need to say, together with the power vested in us by Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker, we are going to make the decision based on the fact that these two people were neighbors. So that's a little bit of an open question. But Tosfos L'shitasam clearly do have this need for Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. And then Tosfos also goes on to say that it has to be a Bezdin Kavua in order to pull this off. You need to be a real Bezdin. And that itself is a whole halachic discussion. We'll get into detail now in terms of what kind of Bezdin you have to be in order to invoke Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. So that itself is a question. But apparently Tosfos' point is that you need to have at least stature to be able to affect this, that this is the discretion of Dayanim, not some discretion of people who are functioning right now in terms of evaluating this. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden, one of his comments in the Gemara Ksubas, emphasizes the fact that the Gemara says, Shudu de Daini, and not Shudu de Daina. He assumes that a lone Dain by himself could do this. It has to be a panel of Dayanim. And that's what Tosfos is saying, it has to be a Kavua Bezdin. What may also be relevant, Jonathan?
Why is that so important to Tosfos if it doesn't have to reflect any sort of reality?
Well, I think that's the point, that how do they have the right to issue a din which is not based on reality? When they're doing an actual din, so we know their authority flows from the facts, flows from the elements of the situation, either the facts of the case or the facts of halach. But if the only thing making this real is that they say so, so how does the halacha have such a situation where it could be that the only thing happening here is the Dayanim picked so-and-so. So it seems to be that that function is off the fact that, look, they could have just taken the money and given it to somebody else anyway. They have the authority when they find it necessary to switch money from one pocket to the next. So then this is no worse than that. This is a derivative of Hefker Bez and Hefker, which might be necessary no matter what. But if you think there is something that's emanating from the facts here, so maybe you could say that they justify it without Hefker Bez and Hefker. But if you're saying there's nothing that's making it work, except the Dayan says, boom, it goes to you, so then where does that power come from? Again, you have to also remember that this is a very striking thing that I really find is particularly fascinating. All of these concepts that we're talking about, none of them are connected to any psukim and chumash, are connected to any existing dinim. We mentioned the one exception, maybe Hamotzi Mechaver or Haraya. Rather than that, Yachoku, Kodol, Gvar, Shudda, none of these are coming from any dinim. So Tosus has to explain, wait a minute, you're telling me, according to me, says Tosus, that the dayanim can just decide, all right, we don't know what to do, they can just say, okay, give it to this guy. How does that work? So they need to fill in the blanks a little bit and say, well, look, we also have the concept, Hefker Bez and Hefker, that they are given the authority to reassign property rights. So within that, so then they could do this too.
Right, but it just seems to be an unconnected criteria, the same way you could arbitrarily say anybody who's wearing, like, some sort of hat now has the ability to, and that as long as you wear the hat, you can be the one to do it.
What sounds like that? What sounds like the hat mark?
That Beis Din has the right to arbitrarily choose something, because they're not...
Well, you're bothered by that by itself.
Right.
So that itself you could ask on.
No,
so
right, I'm saying, because that has nothing to do with the fact that they're Dayan. It has nothing to do with the fact also that they're trained. There's nothing that all it has to do
so
with.
So Tosfos says it does, because Dayan means you have knowledge, yes, but it also means you have authority.
But you're not part using the knowledge to do anything.
It doesn't necessarily matter. You know, it could be that the discretion, which is also with secular law also sometimes, you know, the district attorney and the judge has discretion to do things which doesn't necessarily have to be backed up by the facts, depending on what we're talking about. So to here, we're saying the position of being a Beis Din, which not only means that you have knowledge, but also means that you function in regulating society to a certain extent. That's the Beis Din, that's Tosfos emphasizing it's a Beis Din Kavua, means that it's not only a panel of experts, they have to be experts too, but by virtue of their being experts, so they have the authority to regulate society, and this is how they regulate society. So to go back to the mushul of the parent who says, because I said so. So yes, the parent has a lot of qualifications to get to the stage where they get to be parents, but then once they're parents, they have authority over the household, and therefore they can say, listen, this is what I need to say in order for the household to function. That makes it true. So too, Beis Din functions in control of society. We find that in a lot of places. So that's why they're allowed to do Hefker Bez and Hefker, or make institutions that keep society flowing. So too, this is part of it. This is part of their peacekeeping authority. If they say it goes to X, it goes to X. That's part of how they function.
Aren't we afraid that these cases will naturally very often come to Zilus of the Beis Din?
So that's an interesting question as well. So just before we run out of time, let's address that point for a second. Tosfos in Bava Basra quotes Rabbeinu Chananel that says that he has a Kabbalah that we only do Shudda D'Dayni in a situation of Karkos. And that's how we apply it. Other Rishonim disagree. But what's Pshat in that limitation? So there are some who want to explain, there's a Sefer called Svar HaChaim that you can also get on Hebrew Books, where he discusses that view. And he suggests that it's relevant to your concern. That maybe we're afraid that if you have a scenario ever where some facts could come out that's going to contradict it, we really would not want to do the Shudda D'Dayni. We would not want to get the Dayanim involved in assigning it, let's say arbitrarily or even not, and then have it turn up that we can establish that it belongs to the other guy. So therefore, he suggests, this is a little bit of a stretch, but he thinks that Karkos has the advantage that you'll always be able to fix it, because the Karka will always be there. So if something happens later, so then Beis Din can say, okay, now the land goes to that guy. But if people are fighting over a iPhone, so then Beis Din will give the iPhone to one guy, and he'll go off to Australia, And then later on, the evidence will come out that it was really the first guys. And meanwhile, it's now with a guy in Australia, we're afraid of that. We don't want that to happen. So maybe that's why the Daini should be limited to Karkos. Now, wait a minute. And you'll say, wait a minute. Aren't we only applying should the Daini b'dolak l'meikim l'ad the milsim? Where we don't think that, that's not the way we were going to get it, that don't we only apply this where there aren't other facts to come out, so it's not a problem? So in this Sefer, Tzora Chaim, he discusses that at length, and he notes that there is some debate here, he documents it through Rishonim, about what Ikkel HaMekim Allah Demilsa means. Does it mean that it's impossible for there ever to be other evidence? Which might be the case. For example, there's a debate in Rishonim, the Gemara mentions this in the case of Shtei Shtaros Hayotzim Biyom Echad, right? You have two Shtaros, they both have the same date. And therefore, one possibility is, should the Daini in that case, two people who both have a Shtar on some land. So it may be that's actually functionally impossible for it to ever be clarified, because maybe as a halachic reality, those two Shtaros are mutually exclusive and there is no way to ever define it beyond what it says. The Gemara is going to invoke Edi Mesir, Edi Chsima in terms of how the Kinyan actually takes place. Or maybe we don't mean it so absolutely. Maybe we mean that Lekka L'meikim L'ad HaMilsa doesn't mean impossible. It means it's extremely unlikely based on what we know that anything will ever come up to clarify things further. That given the circumstances and the set of realities, it's unlikely that that's going to happen, that there's going to be anything more that's going to tell us anything. But theoretically, it could happen. So in that definition, which he points out, a number of Rishonim seem to see it that way, so then you could say, we'll do should the Daini when we really think it's incredibly unlikely that anything's ever going to turn out. Where that's what Lekka L'meikim L'ad HaMilsa means. But it's still possible. So then, says Rabbi Nachmanel, we have an extra safeguard that will limit it also to Karkos. We'll limit it to a situation where, if in the remote scenario anything ever does come up, we'll be able to rectify it and we'll go back to the land, which will still be here, and we'll say, you get off, you get on, we're going to be able to address it that way. So that's how he interprets Rabbi Nachmanel as basically being an extra safeguard on top of this. Really, we prefer Lekka L'meikim L'ad HaMilsa because we don't want that Zilusa de Beis Din that you're referring to. But in case there is a possibility, so then an extra safeguard is if we limit it to a karka situation, at least we'll be able to come in and rectify it, and we're not going to have the embarrassment of it turns out that this iPhone belongs to the other guy, and now we gave it to the guy who's in Australia now. Hi.
I guess kind of parenthetically, it's interesting then that within this idea of Zilus de Beidin, it would sound like we're not worried that Beis Din makes bad decisions or incorrect decisions. We're worried that they're irreconcilable. Like we don't...
That you can't fix them.
Right. Like, so we have no Zilus de Beidin, it doesn't mean like Beis Din makes mistakes and that like it could be they make lots of mistakes. The only time there's a real Zilus de Beidin is that we're not able to undo it.
Yes and no. I think that Zilus de Beidin, which it's alluded to, is a little bit of an ambiguous term, so it could mean a few things. But I don't know if this necessarily has to mean we're taking that side. What it could mean is that Zilus de Beidin, let's say for argument's sake, it means that we don't want to have Beis Din making mistakes, and we don't want them to come out being wrong. And that's really maybe what old Zilus de Beidin means. But it's going to be even worse. It's going to be an even bigger embarrassment if they're not only wrong, but now they can't fix it, and the wrong guy is off living it up in Australia. If we can at least fix it, so then that will cap our embarrassment a little bit. It'll be something that is fixable, so the same Zilus de Beis Din maybe exists independently, but it's more of a concern if we can't fix it. So I don't know if this has to affect the definition of Zilus de Beis Din. It might just be that we're more worried about Zilus, or you don't even have to invoke that term in understanding of Ben Hanan, it just all fits in a package. If you want to invoke that term, you could say that this is all part of a concern. We don't want Beis Din to be proven wrong, and it's even worse if they're proven wrong and you can't fix it. So if you can fix it, at least that's an extra safeguard that even in a remote scenario, despite having labeled it Lekka L'meikim L'ad HaMilsa, still apparently emerges that they were wrong, should be able to fix it. It's an extra safeguard on top of it. So I don't know if this has to help us define the term or not, the term is still somewhat open to some discussion. Before we run out of time, I want to also invoke the Ephraim question. So there's also a discussion here in honor of Sukkot. So do we say that should the Dedaina is enough to give you a Lachem status, like Ephraim asked yesterday about Kol Dal and Gvar? Will we say you are actually the owner if Beis Din gives you something in the Shud the Dedaina? So it's really arguable. If you look in the Sefer Birkas Avram, it's a popular Sefer, like contemporary Mechaber, one of the Rebbeim in Kol Torah, and many Masechtas, so he has a Sefer Bava Basra. He thought that's totally on this issue. You could argue on this, but he thought that according to Tosfos, to a ruling, a final ruling, regardless of its lack of basis, Beis Din has been mafker from one person and given it to the other person, perhaps. So yeah, it's yours. Lachem for full intents and purposes. According to Rashi, he thinks, it's more of a suffix kind of process. Beis Din doesn't have real evidence. They're taking weak evidence. Okay, you're friendlier with him, you have more of a relationship, and they're using that to decide. So therefore, it's never really an absolute psak that it belongs to anybody. He's allowed to use it. He's not a gazlan. But to call it actually lachem, that he could be yotzer with it on sukkah, he wouldn't go that far. It's arguable. You could say that both of them are real rulings of Beis Din. I don't know if there's a real hechrich from Rashi and the Rashbam to say that it's not a ruling, but that's the way he understood it, that maybe within that understanding, it's not necessarily the Beis Din is paskening it's yours, it's that they'll let the person hold it and play with it until anything further comes up, based on the substandard evidence that they have of these weak considerations of who might be the more likely owner. Okay, so before we start to run into Menachem, we should quickly review what we're speaking about, and hopefully that will help. But so far, everyone following, everything makes sense, more or less, whether you agree with every Nikud or not, but everything makes sense in terms of being clear. So let's try to quickly review what we spoke about today, and that will essentially be our focus on the different methodologies of Yachlokul, Kol Dal and Gvar, Shud the Daini, briefly mentioning Yehi Munach, and tomorrow is a Parsha day. Next week is Rosh Hashanah. After Rosh Hashanah, we'll go into Yom Tov and Yanim for Yom Tshuva and Yom Kippur for the days that we're here. I really hope that the people who are able to be here, who are not out of town for those days, will join us. It's a very unique opportunity to be able to really maximize our service and Tshuva focus. And after Sukkot, we'll come back and we'll talk about Gerard Vamona as an independent sikh a little bit and Migo, and address some of those in Yanim. So just to quickly review what we spoke about today, so we wanted to emphasize some of the nuances within Kol Dal and Gvar, how it's possible to have opposite attitudes, and even if that points us for some points in the same direction. So we talked about the controversy over the Ramah, who says we apply it to a Sveika Dedino, and the commentaries on the side of the page objected. They pointed out that it doesn't make sense within the Rush, that it's all about your passion, and it's against the Trumas Hadeshen, and that's true, although Trumas Hadeshen says a couple of stages of his discussion, so it's both against him and with him. But the Rush and the Trumas Hadeshen really come at it from opposite perspectives. That the Rush, even the Rush doesn't say it, but the interpretation of the Rush comes from an opposite perspective, that Kol Dal Gvar is a good thing, but this doesn't have the ability to be a good thing, because passion will not be relevant if you don't know what's going on. While Trumas Hadeshen doesn't like Kol Dal Gvar, but you're forced into it because otherwise you could end up being contradicted by the facts. But if there's no facts, it's just a question of halacha, so we don't need it. So the same conclusion that it doesn't apply to Sveika Dedina, but coming from opposite attitudes towards Kol Dal Gvar. But in fact, Trumas Hadeshen himself has a couple of suggestions about whether it should apply or not, so it's consistent with him to say that he does allow it in the Sveika Dedina case as well, because he goes through every possibility, and that's what the Ramah ends up quoting. Now we mentioned that the Gemara in Gittin does seem to apply it to a Sveika Dedina case. It's a big question on the Rush's logic and on the Trumas Hadeshen, except the Trumas Hadeshen himself asks it and says it's maybe a Takanas Chachamim. And the Taz asked that question on the Rush and found it to be difficult as well. And then we said, this also gives us the question, so what is Kol Dal Gvar? Is it an actual process of Beis Din, which presumably has some rules, Or is it Beis Din walking away and therefore there's nothing regulating at all what's going on? So some questions you could ask. Let's say the person, one person is much bigger than the other person. He could knock him out without a second thought. So presumably the Rush would have a hard time saying that reflects truth. That we didn't have much of a source to base it on. But the question of what about involving our coasts? If you involve the secular authority, so what about that? So that turned out to be that we had three reasons to say not to, and they all were different. That Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his tshuvas, he objected to the Rush, he objected to the Ramah, that the Ramah says, Avin and Jil Nafsha, you shouldn't do through secular courts. And Rav Moshe says, no, that's only because of Kol Dol Gvar, because of the Rush, because you need to level the playing field. Only things that are about your passion you're allowed to use, but you can't bring in the cavalry. But he was based on the Trumas Hadeshan, who said that it's mechur, it's unseemly to use Zarkos. And he was quoting the Mordechai, and the Mordechai said you shouldn't use it in Kol Dol Gvar because you won't be able to move it back and forth once the government has it. So it's three different approaches to why you shouldn't use the government in Kol Dol Gvar. Two of them limit it to Kol Dol Gvar, and the Trumas Hadeshan that the Rambam actually quotes is probably more susceptible to saying it could be both Avad Inish or Kol Dol Gvar. And then we talked about Shudda D'Daini, about what exactly it means. Rashi and the Rashbam saying that it means that Beis Din tries to figure out, based on their discretion, what exactly is the most likely scenario. And Tosfos saying, no, it's not about that. They can give it to whoever they want, discretionary, without having to have any basis. And there are Gemaras in Ksubis about the two Tuvias, and the Gemara in Gittin about the Shliach, which both get pulled into the story and perhaps give us rise one way or another, and the question of what the word means, which we've shown him say it means to throw, and if you have to figure out what that tells us. And then the question is Roni asks, so what about the possibility of Shochad? If you're going to say like Tosfos is discretionary, Tosfos themselves ask this question, and they say, well, it's not a problem, because Shochad will make them not Dayanim, so then the whole concept will negate itself. And the problem is the Yerushalmi does call it Shuchta the Daini, and the Karbon HaEidah says that it means that they can take Shochad, it's a difficult idea, and the Bnei Moshe interprets that Gemara differently. And then we talked about the Tshuva Sarash that says it's all about making peace. And then we talked about Tosfos in Kiddusha and that Fine Dalid and says that this is invoking Hefker Beis Din Hefker. And we discussed how for Tosfos' position you probably need that. For Rashi's position, we're not sure whether or not you need it. And we talked also about the requirement of the Beis Din Kavua that Tosfos talks about. We talked about, actually, we didn't get up to the next one, but so I'll have to see if we. Maybe we'll fill that in tomorrow a little bit. And then we talked about the question of what is it considered lachem or not? The Birkas of Ram's assumption that according to Tosus it would be lachem, according to Rashi it wouldn't. We weren't so sure you had to say it that way. And we talked about the concern of is there a problem of Zulusta Beidina or of a general issue of falsehood that may come out if facts tell us differently. So we mentioned the Tzora Chaim's discussion that might be what Rabbeinu Hanan was getting at, that we limit it to Karkos, that first of all, it's unlikely anything's going to happen to contradict it because we apply this in a case of Lekel and Mekam Ola Demilsa. So if you hold like the Rishonim that it's impossible to make Mekam Ola Demilsa, so great. If you hold like the Rishonim would say it's incredibly unlikely, so then that helps. But what if something does turn up? So maybe Rabbeinu Hanan means that we're better off if at least it's a Karkos situation, because then theoretically it could be reversed. And that will be at least somewhat of a resolution to that situation. I will mention before letting you go that there is a difficult Maharal, that the Maharal is quoted by the Tosfos Yontif in Mishnah and Peah and his Gur Aryeh in Shabbos. The Gemara and Daf Yud talks about Don Din Emes Lamito. Is somebody who Kadosh Baruch Hu is a partner with, is a Dayan who really figures out the Emes. So the Maharal says, yeah, he figures out the Emes, not like Shudda D'Daini. So what exactly that says about the process of Shudda D'Daini is a whole discussion, what exactly it means by that. Some later Sfarim argued on that is part of the Emes, the Dayanis, so that's also a part of this discussion. And his Gur Aryeh in Shabbos, he says that even if it comes out right, it's not through the process, I guess that's the truth. So that doesn't get included in this category of Don Din Emes Lamito. It's something inferior to that. Alright, I wish you a wonderful day. I'll see you, God willing, tomorrow morning. And we will deal with Parshas Nitzav. I got you. Sorry? The stars themselves are metallic. That's the assumption that the stars are valid. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Your diamond's on the top floor?
Sir.